It's number one all over Europe, that song, No Milk Today. It's a traditional Hebrew folk song. The minor section. And it was written by a friend of ours, Graham Gouldman, who wrote several songs for us, including Listen People, East West, and a few film songs from Mrs. Brown, from the Mrs. Brown movie. He wrote No Milk Today for us. He took the idea from the Jewish folk song, the Hebrew folk song, developed it with new words, and then added major sections to it. And he just said, how about this, lads? And we said, that's a good one, Graham, we'll do that. And we had a hit with it everywhere. Classic song. There's nothing much more you can say about that. We heard
Where'd you get the song?
Jeff Stevens, who wrote the song, and Les Reed. They used to send us songs on a fairly regular basis, you know. They were class writers in England, really classy songs. And that demo came in the office. We all happened to be there when it came in. They put it on the turntable and we all went, yes, that's the one. And that was it. We didn't even have to think twice about it. It was just came. As soon as we heard it, we knew it was a hit. A muscular boy.
No, a must to avoid.
We usually sing She's a Muscular Boy, just for the hell of it. But that was, again, that was from the same film as Leaning on a Lamppost from Hold On. We got to California to make the movie, and the songs they gave us to do were all really old-fashioned tunes. And we called Mickey in, said we could come over and find some real songs. We'd need some better songs for the movie. So he found P.F. Sloan, who'd written Eve of Destruction. He said, like, come down and give us some tunes. And Pete came down and played us four songs, which we loved. And we did them straight away in the RCA studios. And She's a Must to Avoid was the first one we cut. I mean, we did a couple of 50s songs, that being, well, that one and Wonderful World being the two main ones we did. The Rays.
And were then they just personal favorites of yours?
Yeah, they were favorites of mine. I was a couple of years older than most of the guys in the band, so I had a lot of these records in my collection. But that was, again, it was Mickey's idea, but as soon as he mentioned it, I said, yeah, because I've got the Rays record. I also had it by the Four Seasons. I think it was the flip side of a Four Seasons hit. And we came up with just a different approach to it, you know. We just sort of said, we won't do that silhouette, 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 silhouettes. We'll do a guitar riff instead. So it just came. A new arrangement to it. Great song. Baby, baby, can't you hear my heartbeat? Yeah. In the park and going down the highway. It's a bit early for singing. I've just got out of bed. I'll just get out of the bunk in the bus is what I have done here. That was a song by John Carter, again a good friend who was in London at the time writing songs, and it sounded very Buddy Holly to us, and we were Buddy Holly freaks. And he came in the studio and he said, do you want to do this? We said, yeah. So we did it that afternoon, and I put a Buddy Holly type solo to it on a rhythm lead guitar, you know, big jangly thing, and he loved that because he was a Buddy Holly fan too. And that was it, just a good song. The Ho Ho song, as we called it. Ho Ho, Ho Ho, Ho Ho, Ho Ho. Again, a bit more sort of ballsy than most of the ones we did at the time. I liked it for that reason. Kenny Young wrote that song.
Wait a minute, you said it was a bit more what?
Ballsy.
How do you mean?
It had a bit more oomph to it. It wasn't, the other ones were a little softer, you know, more. Yeah. Sort of like nice harmonies and lilting, and this was a little bit more rocky, almost like a Stones song in some ways, you know, the construction of the verse and the lyrics, and that's why we liked it. It was a little bit sort of different. Mickey picked that one straight out of the hat and just said, try this, and we heard it and said, yeah, we'll do that. Mrs. Brown was most people thought it was an old tune, but it was written in the 60s by Trevor Peacock for a musical that was out in England, a musical play.
For a musical, was there really a Mrs. Brown behind this? It was in a musical.
There was a play called The Boys. I never saw the play, so I couldn't answer the question. But the song came out of the play, and it obviously had something to do with the storyline of the play, otherwise it wouldn't have been in there. I just heard the song, I never saw the play. And then we decided to learn that it was part of our act. Before we made any records, it was part of our act. And we used to dress in schoolboy outfits. little satchels on our backs and do all stupid things. And we were making our first album, which took a whole 3 hours to make. And the first album was our stage act. And Mickey said, well, you've got 11 songs, what's the... give me another song for you for the album. So we said, we know this one. So we did played in Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter. He said, that's good. I said, well, shall we record it? He says, we just did. So it went on the first album. It was released in the US, and all the disc jockeys in America basically started playing that one tune off the album. Apart from I'm Into Something Good, that was the next one they played. So that was taken off the album then, it was forced into being a single, and it was really an accident. So that was the start of the novelty side, which we sort of developed to a certain degree. I Mean Something Good was our very first record. It was a song which was an American tune that Mickey Most, who was our producer, or became our producer when we cut that song, sent to us to learn, said, learn this and come down to the studio. So it was our very first record. We were excited. We went down, drove overnight, didn't get any sleep, walked in the studio, met a piano player we'd never seen before, who Mickey decided we were going to have a keyboard on the record, and we did 3 hour session, cut two songs. One of them was I Made Something Good. Went to number one, and that was it.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised when it went to number one, but when we actually heard the recording finished, I was surprised at how we sounded in a studio. We'd never been in a studio before, and I thought, well, that's a big sound. We didn't sound like we were making a big sound when we were doing it, you know. And it was the whole sort of experience of hearing what we sounded like come out on record, was on tape, was a whole new thing to us, you know, an excitement in itself. Ray Davis of the Kinks. I think he'd just done a couple of tunes. He'd written a few songs that were very similar at the time, and I don't think he wanted to put that one out as a single for himself or for the Kinks, because he had Dedicated Follower of Fashion and a couple of others around the same that were a very similar feel. So it was on his album, and he just sent it in to Mickey Most, said, hey, would the lads like to do this? It's up their street, you know. So we just said, yeah, let's have a go at that.
So it was sent in to whom, your producer?
Yeah, Mickey Most produced he produced all those songs. And he basically picked most of the songs for us. He was good at placing the right song with the right artist. That was his forte. As opposed to being a technical producer who had great sort of innovative engineering and sort of ideas. But he had a good ear for a good song, and he knew the artist had put that song with, and he could get the best out of an artist in the studio.
You hear a song like Dandy, and he thought, this is right for our group.
No, exactly, who he was for. That was ours, you know. Well, that's a George Formby tune. We recorded that in L.A., in RCA Studios in 1965, and it was for inclusion in a movie. And the whole thing was ridiculous, really. We needed another song in the movie, and we had a shot where we were supposed to be hanging in space with these space uniforms on. And we decided we were going to sing Leaning on a Lamppost. Now, why we ever thought of that, the reason has completely gone beyond me now at the time. We must have been all drunk or something. I mean, I saw the film for the first time in 25 years, about a week ago, believe it or not. Yeah, first time I'd ever seen it. And...
how many stars would you give it on five, on a scale of five?
Well, I don't think I'd comment on that. I mean, you made films in those days because there were no videos, so you made groups like us made movies to sell records. You were there to sell a soundtrack album. You weren't there because you were an actor or actors. You were just there because it's the quick way of getting across to the media. but just the whole ridiculousness of it just came back to me when we saw us hanging in space singing Leaning on a Lamppost. It's an old... a very old music hall song. We decided to do that deliberately after we'd had a success with Mrs. Brown. Mrs. Brown was an accidental success. So Henry was a deliberate follow-up to that side of things. We were basically known by then for doing the harmony pop songs like I Made Something Good, Silhouettes, Can't You Hear My Heartbeat? And we decided to follow up the novelty angle as well, because Mrs. Brown had been so successful, and we deliberately said, let's do Henry VIII. Because it was an old music hall song. It had been successfully done in the rock and roll idiom by a guy called Joe Brown, who you may never have heard of, but he was one of the 50s sort of rock and roll guitar players in England, and he made a few good hit singles. And so we deliberately covered that and put it in our own inimitable fashion and decided to do it. The thing about that song is it took a minute 47 seconds to record, yet it took us about an hour to record the very end, last few seconds of the song, because every time we got to it, we started laughing. There's a little jazz thing and then like doodle-dum, dum-dum, doodle-dum, yeah. Little traditional jazz sort of riff. And we just thought it was so stupid to put that on the end that every time we got to it, we started laughing. So we actually kept the very first take of the song and we dubbed on the ending, which took about an hour to dub on. The song took a minute 47 seconds to record and the ending an hour.